We have quite an agenda to go through tonight, so I thought we would begin the meeting and hope that one more member of the task force is expected, John Darville. I just don't see him. I think we can go through our preliminary matters. Good afternoon. I'm Bill Lynch, and I'm the chair of the Mitchell Park Horticultural Conservatory Task Force, often more commonly referred to as the Domes Task Force. We've met several times beginning last fall, and we're a task force that has 10 representatives, and we are tasked with finding out what would be the best alternative for the future of the Mitchell Park Horticultural Conservancy, and to make a recommendation of to the county board and the county executive at the end of our deliberations. To find out information about these meetings and what we're considering, I would direct your attention to Milwaukee County's LegiStar program. The way I do it is I Google in Milwaukee County LegiStar and then look for the name of the committee on the calendar. Click on calendar, find the date, and then that will get you our materials and our agendas. I believe you can also sign up to be alerted to our meetings and agendas. So thank you all for being here for this important meeting. There are some procedural matters that I want to remind the task force of. In order for our minutes to be adequately prepared, and even more importantly, for those who are listening to these proceedings on radio, we need to amplify our voices. So as we did at the last meeting, there's a microphone there that we will pass around among us when you want to speak. And please wait until you get the microphone so that we can fully inform those who are not able to be present because of what we're talking about. So the main item on our agenda today is to receive a report from the National Trust for Historic Preservation. The peer review, study that they have conducted reviewing the work of our previous consultants at respecting options for upkeep and maintenance and restoration of the domes. We also will have a couple of other agenda items. We'll see how this first agenda item goes before we make a decision about how far into the rest of the agenda is practical. We'd like to have these meetings not keep going until we've been here after 8 o'clock a couple times. So let's see if we can avoid that this time. So I'd like to call the meeting to order and have the roll call, please.
Bria?
Here.
Dargo?
Here.
Gerda?
Here.
Haas?
Here.
Krawicki?
Here.
McCarthy?
Here.
Tice? Washington, West, and Mr. Chairman.
Present. Randall Washington informed us that he would not be able to attend. We have not heard from Supervisor West. She indicated she did intend to attend, and maybe she will later. The first item on the agenda is to consider review and approval of the minutes of the meeting held by this task force on January
4th,
2017.
Move approval.
Second.
There's a motion to approve the minutes. And seconded. Made by Gerda and seconded by Bria. Any discussion of the minutes of the last meeting? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. I also forgot to mention that at the end of our agenda, we have an opportunity for public comment on agenda items and the materials that are discussed. If you anticipate you would like to have your views about what we discussed come before the body, There are cards that you can fill out, giving your name and your intention to speak. You can also use those cards to give us written comments if you don't wish to present them to us orally. And we try to see how much time is left and how long the attention span is of the task force in determining how extensive these comments will be. But we would like to hear from the public after you've had a chance to hear the presentations and discussions that are on the agenda. So the next item is the matter of the consultants. Whoops. The next item is the National Trust for Historic Preservation peer review report and presentation. And Sandy, would you come up on the 14 and introduce yourselves, give us some of your background, and engage in the presentation.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the task force for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. The feedback here. Can you all hear me? All right. So I'm Jennifer Sandy. I am a senior field officer at the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And the National Trust is a privately funded nonprofit organization that works to save America's historic places. Today, the National Trust designated Mitchell Park domes as national treasures. And this is our signature initiative at the National Trust. It's a revolving and diverse portfolio of over 80 of the most significant and threatened historic places in America. Okay. So this designation means that the National Trust believes that the domes are of crucial national significance. That we care deeply about their future, and that we want to be part of a preservation solution for the dome. So as part of that effort, we hired Wyss Jenny Elsner Associates to perform a peer review of the existing reports and cost estimates for repair of the domes. As the future of the domes is being considered by the task force and by other decision makers here in Milwaukee County, we felt that it would be valuable to have a second opinion to help contribute to the information that's being reviewed by the task force. So I'd like to introduce Peter Ferrara, Associate Principal and Project Manager, and Bruce Castle, Principal from WJE, to present their findings. Thank you for your consideration.
Thanks, Jennifer. All right, as Jennifer mentioned, we're just going to do a summary of the report that we submitted to the National Trust. And I led our effort on the precast framing of the domes, and Bruce Castle, who's sitting over here, led our effort on the cladding. So what exactly did we do? We reviewed all the documents that were available to us. We reviewed all the grade reports. There were several grade reports we reviewed. We reviewed the original drawings for the domes. We were on site for one day. We had a meeting with the county. We had a meeting with Grace during that site visit. We just did visual observations of the domes. We didn't get close up to any of the members, but except around the perimeter and the low members of the domes. And then based on all the information we gathered, we developed our own repair option, and we also did a cost estimate with help from a contractor. So just a little history of the domes. Donald Grieve, a local architect, won a design competition for his domes concept. Construction began in 1959 in the Christensen stages. Show Dome was completed in 1964, followed by the Tropical Dome and the Arid Dome in 1967. Super Sky was the designer and installer of the original glass and aluminum cladding, and they're still in business, and they've been working with Grave on some of their options. And then the original construction cost of the domes was $4.2 million. So a little background, Grave has been working on the domes since primary issues have included water leakage, issues with the cladding drainage system essentially leaking into the interior of the building, concrete deterioration, and glass breakage. In 2003-2004, Great performed an up-close inspection of all the concrete framing, and they did some limited repairs, mostly kind of just removing some of the loose concrete. But after the inspection work, some of the concrete spalling continued, and that led to installing the stainless steel mesh that you see in the dome today. And then finally, Great was provided five options, or maybe a sixth option also, to repair the domes with estimated cost between $14 and $64 million. So just a little bit of the construction of the dome. There's a structural precast frame that supports the cladding. The precast members were fabricated on site during original construction, and they consist of generally about five or six shapes. There's 11 different types because the reinforcing in some of those members changes slightly. But the precast is arranged in a triangular pattern to form the shape of the dome. And those 11 members make up essentially an assembly that you see on the right of this slide, and then that assembly repeats itself 25 times around the dome. And they're all connected with plates, and I have a little shot of how they're connected. So I just wanted to show this slide. It just sections through the precast members. The red dots are the reinforcing. So there's typically two reinforcing bars in these members. And really what I was trying to highlight was with the arrow, we have pretty good concrete coverage on this main reinforcing to the edge of our members. We have typically more than an inch. And some of those big members, we have like 2.5 inches of cover, which really helps protect our internal steel that's doing most of the work on the precast frame. Like I mentioned earlier, the aluminum and glass curtain wall, cladding, is supported on the frame. You see in the plan view on your left, all those members come together and they're welded to a plate. But in addition, there's these embedded plates in the members that support the cladding. So you see, that's a section through one of the members. You have the cladding piece that's welded to this embedded plate in the precast. And in green, you see we have less than a half inch of concrete at the edge of those plates. Moving on to the cladding construction, it's a glass and aluminum clad dome. There's quarter inch wire glass. The glass is held in place with pressure caps and fasteners, which I'll show in the next slide. And these aluminum rafters are part of the drainage system. So all these members that frame into the hub, they're part of the drainage system. And those are opposite the side of the pressure caps in the corners of your glass on the outside. So here's a section through the glass. So you have your fasteners and your pressure caps, and those are holding your glass in place. And then there's the glass. So that's kind of what the skin of the domes looks like. And then here's a shot from the outside. So here's the pressure caps that are framing into the circular hub, and then below these are where you have the rafters that collect any moisture that bypasses the exterior system. So here's another shot, and it might be difficult for some people to understand, but this is a section through the circular hub, and it's a downspout rafter. We have your circular hub, you have your exterior cover on the outside, and then you have your downspout rafter. You can see your upspout rafter. And What we're trying to point out in this slide is, you know, as water gets into the system, it's intended to flow down the rafters at each hub and out the base of the dome. But what happens is you have a little bit, this opening here is a little bit hot. The downspout rafter is higher than the base of that hub. And we'll get into that a little bit more later. So let's get into some of the observations. We'll first go through the precast framing, and then we'll talk about the glass and aluminum cladding. So this, you're seeing the edge of an embedded plate in the precast member, and it's a small little piece of concrete. This is an area where they went back and repaired. They essentially removed the loose concrete, and then they painted the embedded plate. In this, if you get any slight corrosion on that plate or just regular thermal movement in the domes could induce some cracking and spalling of that concrete. And here's kind of just another shot of the concrete that was removed and painted. So within the domes, I believe about 40% of this issue has been addressed. Here's kind of just a shot of just a small fragment of concrete that had been collected by the county workers at the domes, and they've been logging them and documenting their location. We did see in a couple locations where there was an exposed reinforcing bar in the precast framing members. We didn't see this at a lot of locations. This is a situation where your internal bars, when they were originally fabricated, were fabricated too close to the surface. But really, we didn't see a lot of this condition, just a few locations. And it looks like maybe the cover of the concrete was removed and then it was painted as part of the repair. And then some of the precast members are joined. This one's kind of hard to see, but there's a grouted joint between those precast members, and some of that's deteriorated, which would need to be addressed. And then there's some cracking in the precast members. None of the cracking was concerning. It's transverse to the members. It seems like normal movement type of cracking that you would expect in a precast member. You get restraint and the concrete cracks. So you have a lot of reinforcing within that member that's crossing those cracks. In general, the dome coating system is original. It's peeling. It's sturdy. It's debonded. There's a lot of areas that look like this. And then here's just a shot of the mesh on the inside. It's on the inside face of the precast members within each of the domes. Moving on to the glass cladding, there's glass breakage. We saw several of these that are cracked. This one appears to be impact damage. We understand there's been quite a bit of vandalism on the glass. Here's just another shot of another piece of cracked glass that we observed. You can see just the wire within the original glass. So we have these pressure caps. There's an internal gasket. In general, the gasket appears deteriorated. It's kind of worn. We think this is likely a large avenue of water infiltration passing these pressure caps and then getting into your internal drainage system. Another thing to note is those pressure caps, they have just a thin edge, which we'll get into a little bit later. So here's a shot from the outside. Someone has come back and sealed around some of the circular hubs, maybe as an attempt to address water infiltration. We did see a lot of the fasteners in those pressure caps that are starting to pull out. When we did our survey from the inside, looking up at where we were seeing leaf locations, we would always see just this brown, black, gooey material, and it was an indication that there was a leak at that location. There would actually be dripping water at those locations, and that's the downspout rafter you're seeing. So let's briefly go through the grape options. So option one is replace broken glass and then repair the cladding and the concrete frame. Option two is essentially the same as option one, but you're removing all the glass and you're installing insulating glass units. Option three is replace all the glass with coated insulated glass, and you're installing a new, so essentially you're installing a new skin in this option with on a repaired concrete frame. Option four is similar to option three, but the new glass cladding is self-supporting and it's not relying on the existing existing concrete precast frame for support. And then option five is just a new cladding system, and you're removing the concrete frame, so you're essentially getting a new, I guess, cladding structure. And then option R is essentially building the domes per the original design, but using insulated glass instead of wired glass. And this is just a chart. I think we put it up based on the information in the report, so you can just see the cost for option one through option R from 14 to 64 million. The estimated life of those options, and it wasn't quite clear to us if those were the estimated life of the domes or the repairs for those options. Option one having very high maintenance down to normal maintenance, and those were described in the report, and then whether or not the mesh could remain or be removed, and essentially in options one through four where the precast was remaining in place, their opinion was the mesh had to stay in place also. So here's some of our comments on the grape options. So options two through four use coated insulating glass at a cost of approximately 3 to 4 times the repair option of cost of option one. The only difference between option one and two is the replacement of all wired glass with coated insulating glass, and that adds about $24 million to that option. There was some energy studies done in the reports by grade, and based on the energy savings, I believe it was about $100,000 a year. At that $24 million cost, it would take a long time for the insulating glass to pay for itself. We estimated it would take over 200 years for that option to pay for itself. So based on the slight energy savings, in addition to, we did have some discussions with Rao Brothers, and they're a big greenhouse manufacturer. They've been around for a long time. They don't use IG units, and they wouldn't recommend IG units for this application or other greenhouses. Essentially, they've reported to us that it's not beneficial for the plant life. And we also did review this with the Chicago Park District on a project we helped them out with, and their thoughts were similar to Rao Brothers. And we're not greenhouse experts, so we're relying on that information from them, and we think it might might be good to have a greenhouse expert come in and hear it from their mouth. Just a couple other comments. Option one has a slightly higher cost related to glass. We think option one will have a slightly higher cost related to glass maintenance, but there will be glass maintenance no matter what option you choose. And then the maintenance cost for options 2 through 4, because the precast framing remains in place, is going to be identical for those options. So the next set of slides is some considerations we think for enhancement. So we think drape option one is the most viable, but we have some considerations for enhancement. So here's that same section through the glass. And the original pressure cap has really tapered thin edges, and it doesn't allow for a new sealant joint around the perimeter of the glass, a wet seal. And so we're proposing to remove and replace all the pressure caps on the dome with a new redesigned pressure cap that would allow for a thicker edge. It would allow for us to get sealant joints around the perimeters of those, and that would be, in addition to the gasket, a new gasket underneath. And we think this would largely resolve water leakage into the domes. And I think we've successfully done this on many projects. Here's that same section through the circular hub. So like I mentioned earlier, at locations where we did observe leaks, we saw this black gooey material at those locations. And so we think you could either do targeted repairs. Our estimate, we assumed you would just go back, open up all these hubs to do the repairs. And this is essentially what Drape is proposing in their report, where they opened up some of these. They observed water sitting in that below the elevation of the top of that downspout rafters, which is likely causing the water leakage into the dome. And so they're proposing to install a self-leveling sealant in that low spot, which we think is a great option. And essentially, we think that would allow for water to not leak into the domes, but leak into the original drainage system as intended. A few other considerations. Laminated glass could be considered instead of replacing with similar wire glass. That will have an aesthetic impact on the dome. You'll probably see the laminated glass, and you'll see the wire glass. We think further research needs to be performed on the coating systems that were proposed. I think a stain and then an epoxy were proposed. We definitely wouldn't recommend a stain for the concrete, just because it's not going to have a lot of crack bridging capabilities and not provide much protection to that concrete. The epoxy could work, but we think a little bit of laboratory analysis, and we kind of get into this in our report about some different things that we would recommend checking before selecting the coating system. And potentially each of the domes, because of their environments, a different coating system might be warranted in each of those domes. Going back and proactively removing the spall, even if there's no deterioration, we think if you go back to where that little bit of concrete cover is on those embedded plates and either grind it off or saw cut it off and chip out that potential spall, we won't have to worry about future spalling and those fragments of concrete coming down. And it's our opinion that the wire mesh could be removed after repairs are completed to address water infiltration in the domes. If you go back to these potential spall areas, we think the mesh could remain down. That doesn't mean that the dome could be just left in place. You would still need to do regular inspection. inspections, maintenance, and the wire mesh does provide extra safety for any potential falling factory. But we think most of the spalling is occurring on those edges, from what we understand from the reports, and we could eliminate that potential hazard. So based on this, essentially we developed a repair option, which is essentially grape option one with the enhancements that we discussed previously. And we think that will provide a long-term repair of the dome. We estimated that cost for all three domes to be approximately $18.6 million. We did get assistance from Bergman Construction. They had some of their subs come out here, and they priced the different repair items that we provided to them. So that $18.6 million is more costly than the $14 million in grape option one. And the primary difference is related to accessing all those pressure caps, removing all those pressure caps, and replacing all those pressure caps in each dome, which we think will provide better weather protection and really increase the life of the dome and the repairs. So in closing, we think the domes are unique, architecturally significant structures that can be repaired and preserved. I mean, based on our observation, we think the domes are performing pretty well during the first 58 years of service. I mean, water leakage into those domes has never really been addressed. I think with the repairs that we would like to see performed, we think we could address that water leakage. Like I've been saying the whole time, the primary issues are related to water leakage and then the spalling on the side of those embedded connections. And then with any project, we would recommend some mock-up areas. You'd pick a portion of the dome. You would do the recommended repairs evaluation. You would test those repairs prior to doing a repair to all three domes. That's all I have. If anybody has any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Questions from the... Are there any questions from the task force members?
I'd like to first of all thank the Trust for funding the peer review study. The main question I have is, what's the expected life of the repairs you recommend? We think they're long-term repairs. We think if you could cut moisture out to the concrete, you wouldn't be back to that concrete for quite a long time, 15, 20 years. I mean, you'd have to regularly inspect it, but I mean, based on the studies they did a while back, there wasn't any corrosion activity within the body of those concrete. They're pretty well protected. If you get a good coating system on that, they're not going to see moisture. So we would think you wouldn't be back to the concrete for quite a while. The cladding system, there would be... Sure.
I'll answer the question about as it relates to cladding. So in the cladding, we're recommending this wet seal. That's the term we use for supplementing the original design to keep out water out of the... that gets around between the glass and the metal and then ultimately becomes the leak inside the building. We've done this on a number of jobs, so we have confidence in this as a repair of an existing building. It's obviously not a new building kind of design element, although we would put new metal on the outside, and that's only because of those particular severe metals. The fact that, as Peter expressed, the metal comes down to a very thin dimension at one photo with the tape measure next to it. It was supposed to show that. So we would be putting new metal on, but the reason for the new metal on the outside is simply so we can get that additional wet seal. And we've done this on a number of buildings where the glass and metal has, over time, has deteriorated, largely was deteriorating as the rubber gaskets that are compressed between the glass and the metal and water leaks are occurring. And it's a maintenance procedure that has lasted 20 years on many buildings until it needs to be maintained again. So it doesn't mean that in 20 years your roof falls down. It might mean that in 20 years, you know, you would reach a point where you might need to be doing, you might be once again looking at a water leak issue and needing to be maintaining the caulks. The other thing, of course, is glass break. You have incidents with glass breaks today because people, maybe something hits the glass. Some of the low ones look like somebody probably intentionally hit the glass. Those would happen under any circumstances. There's nothing we are proposing, or there's nothing that Graves is proposing that precludes that circumstance. Even, you know, Peter talked about the recommendation that Graves makes for new glass. New glass, no glass is break proof. If you wanted break proof, you would probably be looking at some type of plastic in lieu of glass. And I don't think anyone proposes that really. I think glass is the conventional material used for most greenhouses. We're not proposing, I don't think in the cladding, we're not proposing a 100-year solution. I guess maybe if you looked at option 6 or something on Grace Report or option R, by the time you're looking at something that's brand new, everything brand new, you probably would expect more than 20 years. You'd probably expect something similar to what you have today. But, of course, it's a question of whether you want to build brand new and spend that money for brand new with less maintenance demands.
So ballpark 20 years and then reassess and perhaps do the same thing again?
As it relates to the water tightness of that planet.
Bruce Caskell, who is speaking to you.
I'm here with Peter, and Jennifer mentioned me up front. My expertise is in glass and glazing, so I was asked by Peter to join him to look into the glass, specifically the glass relative to the domes.
So after about 20 years, there might be another round of having to replace the gaskets and the seals, but you would not have to redo the, again, change the design of the pressure.
That's right. Yeah.
With the language here.
Yeah, no. The reason we're proposing to put new metal on the outside is not because your old metal is deteriorating. But it's simply that that feature of the original metal with the way it slopes down to the glass, it's a nice look. Our look might be a little more clunky than that look, but it gives us a surface where we could put that silicone wet seal, and that's the key to what we're proposing as an enhancement.
So is it fair to say that if we follow these recommendations, the domes could continue in operation indefinitely as long as another round of repair was done 20 or 30 years ago?
As it relates to the glass, I think
Really?
And what about the concrete?
I mean, the concrete, if we shut the water off that concrete, interior concrete could last forever. So, I mean, we're going to remove all the faults that are causing the majority of your issues. Some of those photos where you saw where the reinforcing steel is too close to the surface, we could address those. I mean, I think for us to make more definite, we would have to do a little more work as far as laboratory analysis of the concrete, there's other things that play into concrete, the carbonation depth over time, carbon dioxide. Basically, your pH in your concrete goes down, it's no longer protecting your steel as well. water tightness of your structure, that precast framing will serve for a long, long time.
Roger Krowicki. This question is for Bruce. I'd like a little bit more information on the wet gaskets because I really haven't heard that term before. What type of gaskets are currently in place on the domes? They have not been replaced. So when the glass has been replaced, they have not replaced the gaskets. And how are the wet gaskets different?
So, okay, thank you for the question. So let me try and illuminate a little bit. So currently there is a rubber gasket. It's a piece of rubber. It's probably either neoprene or EPDM rubber from back in the early 50s. That is a piece of rubber that goes around the original piece of glass. It's on the outside between the pressure cap, and it's also on the inside, and it's got the original Skyline design. The original Skyline design actually integrated a little bit of a condensation cross into that gutter design. It's a very clever little design feature. So then any condensation water, anything that just sweats on the inside of the glass, would be collected into that trough instead of that water dripping down. Obviously, your greenhouses that are very humid could also have condensation on the inside. The drier greenhouses probably don't have that, but the wet ones do. And so they anticipated managing both a leak from the outside as well as some condensation from the inside. The what we call the wet seal is really what's diagrammed up there in the green, and it's not a gasket. If we use the word gasket, I apologize for that. It's really by saying a wet seal, we're talking about the application of silicone and caulk to two surfaces. One surface is the blue surface of the new metal, and the other one is the glass surface itself. So it's a bead of silicone caulk that bonds between these two surfaces that is, by its adhesion to those surfaces, is watertight and keeps the water out. And silicone has a lot of good properties for elongation capability, so that if there's a little bit of moving, when there's a little bit of moving between glass and metal, the silicone responds well to that. Silicone is probably what's been used for maintenance on the outside of the building over the years. You could see that there's been maintenance work around the hubs. That's caulk maintenance, and it's a pretty conventional supplement to an existing building. Again, I want to emphasize that what we're talking about here is a supplement to what's there today. We're not talking about a new solution. You know, we would still have the glass, we'd still have gaskets there, but we would add this silicone wet seal to the outside.
All right. Well, thank you for the clarification. We're really talking two different things here, replacing the existing gaskets and also adding this wet seal. Okay, next question. The leveling agent, if you could go back to that picture. Is that a product that would be poured into that area to sort of like top it off so that the water doesn't pool up in that area?
Correct. Yes, they would have to go in.
Yeah, there's self-leveling sealants that basically you shoot them out of a gun, but they'll essentially... It would just fill that. They would have to press the hole just to get it clean because we still wanted to get adhesion to the circular hub, and then it would just kind of fill that up. And that would allow for water wouldn't sit in that hole, and it would seal that little corner between the rafter and the circular hub.
Okay, and then just one more question, and this is the perfect slide to be on. And that's the downspouts. I didn't hear any comment about cleaning out the downspouts because there's concern that those could be plugged and that's why the water is backing up.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't see that in there as a major issue, but if it is, I think that would be something that would definitely probably need to be cleaned out.
I'm going to amend one thing Peter said. So he said you could shoot that with a gun. Caulkers call their devices that they caulk with, they call them caulking guns. It's the type of gun. He said shoot it with a gun. The hub is on the outside. There's a photograph that shows the hub that allows you to gain it. I mean, there's a plate that covers over it from the outside that lets you gain access to the hub. Once that plate's removed, you can gain access into these hubs. You can clean. I think before you did any leveling sealant, you would probably clean everything up. I think you'd probably, you know, essentially you'd be routing those downspouts to if there's any gunk in them. That's filled up them over time. You know, you probably do something to route them, just like you would, you know, any type of guttering downspout. And then you would, once everything's nice and clean, you wouldn't put the leveling sealant in there until you've cleaned it up, and they're probably pretty messy in there. So I assume there'd be some significant cleaning and taking care of accumulated debris that's in those.
I have a question. Do you have any insights into us about the phasing of the work that you recommend? Are there priorities of what should be done first, second, what's more urgent, what's lesser?
Yes, I think we did address that a little bit in our report. You know, the mesh is installed. The mesh is installed, so we didn't see anything on the concrete that was saying you need to get to that concrete right away and repair the concrete. We think addressing water leakage into the dome should be the number one priority. So, I mean, you could leave the mesh in place and phase the work in a fashion where you're addressing all the cladding issues first and then coming back and doing the concrete work first or second. Obviously, whenever you phase work, there's a higher cost associated with that. Contractors need to mobilize a couple different times. So I think there's options for phasing. I can't say we've looked into phasing, but we do mention that with the mesh in place, you do have some flexibility.
But isn't the cladding work outside and the concrete work inside, so they're two really distinct projects?
You mean as far as keeping them separate? I think you could keep them separate. I'm trying to think if anything would be affected, but essentially all the cladding stuff would be done from the exterior, and all the precast would be done from the interior. So you could address them separately.
Are there any other questions?
The proposal for repairing the domes in this manner, is this different than what RAF had? Is it a completely different idea on repairs?
Under option one? Mm-hmm.
Could you flip back to the...
Sure. Basically, we think option one, which is replacing all the glass, repairing the concrete, and then the enhancements mostly being the new pressure and wet seal, the new pressure cap and wet seal on the outside.
So your proposal is similar to option one here. Can you flip to the next slide? So Greg could propose option one of a $14 million estimated cost,
yep,
for 5 to 10 years. And was their option one similar to the what you use? I guess the question is, are we comparing apples to apples or apples to oranges?
There's a little more in our option than in the grape option one. And that's the difference with the added cost and the option we're proposing.
So Graves option for just the repair is $14 million for 5 to 10 years, and your option is $18.6 million for an estimated 20 years.
Correct.
Is that
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how they came up with their estimated life with 5 to 10 years. But we think our option would provide a long-term repair for the dome.
Okay. And is your repair option different than how they, I can't remember what option one repair was.
What great option one was, essentially. Yeah, we're just all broken glass, and that's the same as our option. We're just basically going back to all the broken wire glass, replacing that glass with all the pressure caps and dome that are coming off in that option.
And that's where you get the longevity of 10 more years.
Correct. In our opinion, we think that's going to really reduce water leakage into the dome.
All right, thank you.
So the big difference between yours and Grace option one is that you are stopping water infiltration in a way that they are not proposing to do?
Well, they're just going back to just the areas that are replaced. I think just the 400 units on each stone that need to be replaced. And I can't remember the exact number, but there's, I think, thousands of lights of domes that would not be addressed in their option one, which we are addressing. The glass is not cracked, but we're addressing leakage around the perimeter of those glass units.
So theirs is reactive, and yours is, in your opinion, more proactive in terms of preventing infiltration of water?
Correct.
Okay. This question I have is, we're all laypersons here, and we have opposing points of view, so things like insulated glass, it either is or isn't, and that's a huge expense if we went in that direction. Grace says yes, you say no, and I'm an English major, right? I'm not going to weigh in there. And Jeremy's not here, so there's somebody from the county, and a referee.
Well, that's what I would suggest. I'm not an engineer either.
Well, no, please, Mr. Cargill.
Thank you. I'm not an engineer, but I believe the report is weak and vague. It is not comparing apples to apples, and I would suggest that we come back at another meeting to sort of show you those comparisons, let our staff review the details behind it, and show you what we see or what we, in terms of the county engineers and our team, to do that comparison for you.
I just wanted to go back over the point about the insulating glass versus versus not. And Peter said this in his presentation, but I know a fair amount about glass and glazing. I've been doing this for 30 years. But greenhouses are a very specialized beast. We contacted a couple people we know in the greenhouse business, and they questioned the decision about using insulating glass. Obviously, the payback presentation that Peter made was simply just taking the numbers that were in the Grace reports. But we agree that that decision is a big decision. That's probably the biggest decision that's going to be considered by you relative to anything you do on these domes. It really pays to consider that one carefully. Peter mentioned you don't have to go to them, but they're very accomplished in this area. This is an outfit out of Cincinnati called Rau Brothers. It's spelled it's rough. It's R-U-G-H. But they're very accomplished in greenhouse design. Whether it's them or whether it's someone else who really could give you advice on the appropriate glass. It just seems to us that insulating glass was a surprise when we read that was the recommendation, and we thought it was worth bringing that up, that it struck us as out of the ordinary for what we would have expected for a recommendation for new glass. If you go down the avenue of new glass, it struck us as a recommendation that we wouldn't have anticipated reading.
On the graph charts, it also lists not only the estimated cost of life, but maintenance is very high. I'm not sure, I know they explained it, I can't remember what it was, but as far as your proposal and estimation, ongoing maintenance after it has all been repaired, what would your sense be? Is it a normal, high, very high?
I mean, I think we could argue about the maintenance and very high. I mean, it's kind of vague. I know they did provide some background on those. I mean, we think even with IG units, you're going to get broken seal, there's going to be fogged units, potentially leakage at those locations. We do say option one, you're probably going to have a little more maintenance with the existing cladding that's been up there for a long time. I think it's hard to say exactly what that cost is, and we haven't dove into that very much at this point.
Would your modifications change the maintenance likelihood necessity, since you would be redoing and resealing all of the domes, not just the areas where new glass needs to be repaired?
Yeah, like Bruce mentioned, there's silicone sealants that will last 20 plus years, and so if those are installed properly, you might not need to go back to those and replace those silicone sealant joints for a very long time. Which is going to be your primary defense about your primary defense against water getting past those joints and into your internal cladding system, which is kind of nice because if it does bypass that and you corrected the internal drainage system, you might not have leakage in the dome if it's functioning properly and allowed to drain it out as originally designed. If we were seeing leakage mostly related at those downspout rafters where we were seeing that black gooey material and water was just kind of pouring out of those locations.
So would the need to inspect be affected by your proposals compared to Graves' option one without your added modifications?
You mean the numbers in those?
The frequency of the need to inspect to see if there's water infiltration, would that be more or less a necessity comparing your option to Graves' option one?
We think we would be able to stop the majority of the water leakage with the new pressure cap and wet seal. So we think from a water leakage standpoint, that would be better than Graves' option one, in our opinion.
I think this study is a very useful counterpoint to the Graves' study. I think fairly clearly we are not qualified as a body to make a decision about which has the greater merit. And I move that we request county staff to make a comparative review of both studies and make a report to this body at the next meeting.
Second.
Discussion?
Yes, and our study was just a peer review, and we were relying on a lot of
any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, are we ready to vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. So we'll have another opportunity to discuss this in the cameras, and maybe we'll have some time in between to digest some of this and learn more about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My apologies. Mr. Chairman, I hope that we can get the presentation from WJE added to the file so it's available for the presentation we saw. So in Legistar for later review.
Yes.
It is ready.
Okay. So both the presentation and the narrative report are attachments to the agenda for this meeting. The peer review draft designation gets you the presentation materials, the slides,
good.
And the peer review final is the report. There's two different things to click on.
I enjoyed reading the report today, actually, Mr. Chairman. So I want to make sure these slides would also be part of it.
I believe they are. I don't think there are any modifications for much of that. We'll make sure that we have the up-to-date version of the report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
They have a jump drive. If there's nothing more on this agenda item, I believe we can move on to the next agenda item, which is the American Public Garden Symposium update and presentation. And there's Jay Burson, Sandy Fallon, and Jeremy Lucas all attended the American Public Gardens Association meeting recently, and they have prepared a report for us and would like to discuss it with us because of the insights that they gained about the operation and programming and fundraising and other aspects of horticultural conservatories around the country. Again, for the members of the public, their reports are on the LegislateStar website, both the slides and the background material from the organization. And I guess it looks to me Jay, are you going to make the begin the presentation? This is Jay Burson, the Milwaukee County Parks Development Officer.
Thank you. I'll wait for this to pull up a little bit. Maybe any feedback right now? Is this an okay place?
Great, thank you.
So, like the chair said, me, Sandy, and Jeremy Lucas went to Dallas and in Fort